Welcome to another In the Pen podcast, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network, the only podcast for pitcherless that talks exclusively about relievers. I am, as usual, your host, Callan Uslager. I am joined, as always, by my bullpen expert, Rick Graham. Rick, how you doing? I know we had the miss last week. How are you feeling?
I'm doing better. Definitely last week or the week before was a little rough, but starting to, you know, get on the other side of this thing and feeling a lot better this week.
And just to be safe, we don't want you to be feeling like you're carrying the load. So we brought back our good friend Jay Crumpler. He did our NL Dark Horse podcast two weeks ago. So we decided we're going to do the completely same thing in the AL. Jake, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks again for having me on. I'm pumped to talk some reliever. It's always fun to talk some fantasy baseball, and the MLB has been super exciting over the last couple of weeks, so I'm pumped to talk about it some with you guys.
And it's fun when I root for a team who has the best record in Major League Baseball, but that's not, you know, I can talk all day about my Yankees, but I'm sure you would exit this recording, so I'll save that towards the end when you guys are no longer as interested. So kind of like we talked about, we're going to be doing the American League Dark Horse Reliever. We're going to dive into some deeper names in American League bullpens, go through some of the under-the-radar names that you should be keeping an eye on down the stretch as we get through closer to the midway point in the fantasy baseball season. But as always, we're going to start off with the three up, three down, and just sign some positive light. We'll start with three up. Rick, who's moving up in your ranks over the past week?
Yeah, so this week I moved up. I moved Kenley Jansen up a little bit this week. I put him into that top tier. He's having a really good month, and you know, all signs point to him. I mean, it's the ERA was a little high like a couple weeks ago, but everything else looked pretty good. So I think now is the time where, you know, being on the Braves are surging right now. I mean, that's going to be a team that's going to make the playoffs. It's a good team. Jansen's a great closer. He's locked in right now. I don't think there's really any competition for him. I think with, you know, the elite closers have, outside of maybe Hader, haven't been perfect. So I think Jansen deserves to be up there. I also moved up Gregory Soto. He's actually been rising the last couple weeks. I was down on him a little bit last month, and I think he's turned a corner. His walks are down over the last, I think it was 9 innings. He's got a 12-1 strikeout to walk ratio, which if he's able to keep up that, then he's going to keep moving up the list. And Tanner Scott moved up because it looks like he's starting to take over in Miami, and another guy with, you know, control issues. As long as the walks aren't piling up, he could also rise similar to Soto. So those three guys, the veteran Jansen and then the two lefty closers in Soto and Scott.
Jake, do you have anything more to add with some of those guys, specifically the Tanner Scott one? Because we're not going to dive into the NL bullpens as much in this episode, but the Marlins bullpen's one we've talked about all season. Do we finally have some sort of clarity with Tanner Scott, or is it just a little blip and by next week we'll be making that switch again?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. There's so many options in that bullpen, and things really have not been going well. Like we talked about a couple weeks ago, how we thought maybe Cole Sulcer would be the one to take over, or maybe Dylan Floro, who wasn't striking anybody out, and Anthony Bass had the best numbers in the bullpen, and none of those guys were the ones to take it over. I was sort of wary about Scott because of his walk issues, but it doesn't seem like they're going to hurt him if he can strike out guys like we know he can strike out guys. And in this bullpen where they've just been waiting for anybody to take over the job, if you just see one guy like Scott has get a few saves in a row, I think it's pretty safe to say he's going to have the job as long as he can hold on to it. You know, we got Anthony Bender will be coming back soon. If he's not already back, may have missed that news. But either way, I think Scott is going to be the guy to go and grab in your leagues right now, because there don't seem to be many other options right now to lean on in that bullpen other than Scott.
Yeah, and as people go up in the ranks, others must go down. So we'll flip the other side. Rick, who are some of your biggest fallers? I know there's one guy who fell probably the most I've seen anyone fall in your ranks this season. So who are some of the guys you've dropped in the past week?
Yeah, there's, I mean, yeah, two guys that really dropped were Corey Knebel and Danny Jimenez. Knebel, it's just, he hasn't been very productive. He's been very inconsistent. Now he's dealing with a shoulder issue, and, you know, giving his past health and, you know, issues. That's something that really, I think I'm just kind of out on him now and moving on, especially since he's not even, he's maybe their second best reliever. Like, he's probably more of like their third best reliever this season. And, you know, with a bunch of change, with, you know, a change in the managerial position, maybe that brings more changes, such as, you know, a change in the ninth inning. So I'm really souring on Knebel, and Danny Jimenez has just been really, really struggling lately. Good news for him is he doesn't have much of a competition, and we're probably going to go into, you know, Oakland's whole closer bullpen situation later on, but he's definitely on the hot seat. And my third was Craig Kimbrel, because he really, it's starting to get to the point where he needs to turn things around quickly before, you know, we see more Daniel Hudson save opportunities.
Yeah, like I said, we'll get into the Oakland situation a little bit further, but Jake, specifically regarding Corey Knebel and Craig Kimbrel, how concerned are you about Kimbrel? So would you be trying to sell and get out of that as soon as possible? And for Knebel, if him dropping this far, is it still Sir Anthony Dominguez is the next man up in Philly? Or what's your read on that pen now that Knebel's seen this far of a drop-off?
Mm-hmm. Starting out with Kimbrel, I would be a little bit concerned with him. We've seen him go in and out of being able to control his pitches. You know, I think he's pulling them glove side or arm side or something. He's not being able to locate his pitches as well as he normally does. And we saw how bad that could be last year when he got traded to the White Sox. But if you're going to count on any organization being able to fix one of their pitchers, the Dodgers are on the top of that list. So I wouldn't fret too much, but you should be a little concerned, especially with how well Daniel Hudson has been pitching. He's looked honestly better than he's looked in any of the previous few years. And we know he was like a really top option, or one of the top options for the Nationals when they won the World Series in 2019. So I still think he's got something left in that arm. He's averaging 97 on his fastball, which is pretty crazy at his age. And in Philly, I think there's definitely reason to worry about Knebel. We worried about him a couple weeks ago when we last spoke, and it sort of hasn't turned around at all since then, especially now that he's dealing with an injury, which sort of just adds on top of the struggles that he's already had. He's only striking out 21.5% of batters, which is not too impressive, especially from a closer. And when you have some guy like Sir Anthony Dominguez, who's got a 1.5 ERA and is striking out almost 40% or 34% of batters, it's sort of hard to keep him out of that role, especially like we said a couple of weeks ago that Dominguez was the closer when he was a rookie, and they have so many other veteran options in that bullpen as well. There's no reason for Knebel to keep pushing through these struggles, especially if he's struggling with an injury. But I love what Rick pointed out, that the change in managers could result in Knebel losing that job and that somebody else could take over, because, you know, whoever's the new manager is not going to feel any obligation towards Knebel.
Yeah, I think it's a really good situation worth monitoring. That was outside injury. Like I said, the managerial change, it's got the Phillies hot. They were on a 9-game winning streak at one point immediately after firing Girardi. So it is going to be an interesting situation to when Knebel does get back. Do they go into a mix and match situation? Do they give the ball straight up to Dominguez? Do they just throw it right back at Knebel? A little sneak preview to what to watch for, but it's definitely something worth monitoring over the next week. But so we'll transition over to some of the news and notes from this past week. And the first one is probably it's big news. Liam Hendricks has been diagnosed with a forearm strain. He's been placed on the 15-day IL. The tentative timetable from Rick Hahn is about 3 weeks or so that he'll be out. So Rick, we'll start with you. If you're trying to figure out this White Sox bullpen, where do you go? Who's the favorite for saves for Chicago now, especially since their bullpen is a little short right now?
Yeah, it's not Liam Hendricks, but at least they were able to get Joe Kelly back today. So gives him another, if as long as he's healthy, that gives him another solid arm that they can kind of depend on there. But with you know, Aaron Bummer's out, so Kendall Graveman's really the only option I see for their closer role for however long Hendricks ends up being out. I guess Kelly was slated to close today if the situation arises. That's probably because Graveman's pitched the last 2 days, though. So I think Graveman's the ad here, and he's probably, you know, outside of really shallow leagues, he's probably someone you want to pick up if he's still on your waiver wire.
Jake, do you have any other reads? Is it Graveman, or if you're looking for kind of a you know, we won't get to them fully in the under the radar, but if you have a sneaky name for this White Sox replacement, or is it Graveman and then move on?
Yeah, I think it's Graveman. He's just the most reliable reliever in that bullpen. He hasn't been as good as he was last year, which could lead to somebody like, I don't know, Matt Foster or maybe Reynaldo Lopez, who's not really like the closer type, but is somebody who's had a lot of prospect hype in the past. So it would be a pretty interesting career path to see him go from top prospect starter to failed starter to middle reliever to closer of the White Sox with Liam Hendricks on the IL. But I think it's clearly Graveman, and Joe Kelly would be second in line, even though he sports a ERA north of 9.5. So yeah, definitely pick up Graveman right now for the next couple of weeks. Maybe shed a couple tears for your league mates that have Liam Hendricks and spend a high draft pick on him. But nonetheless, yeah, I think it's obviously Graveman right now.
Yeah, I think you're trying to tell us that we need to shed some tears from you, because you were telling us pre-show about your TGFBI team that's now three guys first three rounds down with injuries. I'm sorry to see that.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I've been struggling in that league as well, but not due to injuries, just due to poor drafting. But that's a story for another show. Yeah, this is a tough league. You know, it's fun, but those 15 team leagues can really get to you. But another injury that took place over the past week, we talked about it in the past, Andrew Kittredge's injury. Now we know the full timetable. He's out for the season. He is going to undergo Tommy John surgery. So this Rays bullpen continues to be very wide open. No clear answer. So Jake, we'll start with you. If you're handicapping this Tampa Bay bullpen over what you've seen over the past week or so, is there a favorite? Who's your number one priority if you want to add a Rays reliever at this point?
I think it has to be Jason Adam right now. He's been pretty unstoppable in that bullpen, pretty unhittable. He's got a sub one ERA and a 33% strikeout rate, which is very impressive coming from anybody, especially in a Rays bullpen where you don't really see a lot of guys sort of run away with, like, everybody is effective there, so you don't really see a guy that stands out so much among the rest. But Jason Adam has been absolutely incredible. Obviously, he's not going to get 100% or even 75% of the save opportunities because this is Tampa Bay. So we will see Colin Poche get a lot of matchups when you have a majority of lefties in the ninth, or maybe guys who struggle more against lefties. I think the offseason acquisition, Brooks Raley, is going to get some chances. I've loved what he's been doing the whole year. Super consistent. And I'm looking at roster resource, and it looks like every single closer they have in the bullpen is part of the closer committee. So they've got a lot of choices there. But I would love to see what happens when and if JP Fireisen comes back. He's still sporting an ERA that is zero. He still has yet to allow a run on the year, and I loved what he was doing prior to the injury. So I think when he gets back, he could also play into that situation. But yeah, like I said, I think it's Jason Adam is on the top of the list right now. But you never know with Tampa Bay. They could go to basically anybody. They could turn to you, Callan, at any point. They could call on you to close a game.
You know, my arm, I've been trying to warm up the arm a little bit. I've been a little busy studying, so I haven't gotten as many reps in as I'd want. But if they call me, I'm flying out there. Give me a save. But if it comes to facing the Yankees, I'm grooving fastballs down the middle and letting the Yankees win. I'm just warning Tampa Bay now. I'm not gonna go that deep, Yankee. If I can make the difference for the Yankees, I'll do it and play for Tampa Bay. But Rick, do you have a different read on this Tampa Bay situation, or is Adam your go-to guy and then mix and match for the other however much percent?
Yeah, Jake pretty much summed it up. Adam's the best reliever there. He got their last save. If I want to add anyone in this bullpen, that's going to be the guy. Yeah, and Poche will probably be the left-handed closing option, and, you know, Raley and Whistler will probably work in front of them. But who knows? Again, it is the Rays. Ryan Thompson's numbers look horrific, but he's always getting save opportunities from Kevin Cash. So it's, yeah, who knows? But yeah, I'm interested when Fire Eisen gets back, because he should be back before. Yeah, I mean, he's going to be back before if Anderson comes back this year, or Fairbanks, he'll be back before those two guys. So he could maybe factor into the save situation as well.
Yeah, so we kind of alluded to it. We're going to dive into these American League dark horses. And we started off the show with people who were falling. And one of the names that was mentioned was Danny Jimenez. So let's start out there in Oakland. Rick, we'll start with you. What's your read on Oakland? Is there a dark horse candidate for saves in Oakland? Yes, it's Oakland. We're not going to get many saves. But what's your read out there? Who's someone we could be, we may be sleeping on out in that bullpen?
I think, I mean, yeah, it is Oakland. There's like trying to find someone out here. It's not the easiest thing, because AJ Puck's had a pretty good year. Like, ERA looks nice, but he's not missing a ton of bats. The strikeout rate's, you know, just 23%. I've heard Sam Moll's name kind of been brought up, but I'm not sure if that's a realistic option. I guess if I were going to go dark horse here, I'd say Zach Jackson. He's having a pretty nice year, striking out people at a 33% rate. It lets up a lot of hard contact, but yeah, there's not a lot to choose from in Oakland. So at least this guy's got some big time stuff, and maybe, you know, he can close out some games for them down the stretch.
And Jake, just in general, as we kind of tie it back to Jimenez, are you concerned with him? Would you drop him? Do you still think he's the favorite in Oakland, or do you think his struggles have kind of turned the tides away from him?
I wouldn't go and drop him just yet. I think you got to give him at least one more week to figure things out. It's definitely been a rough last week. I know he had a couple outings, at least three outings, where he gave up multiple runs, and that's obviously never great from your closer. So you got to give him a little more time, though, especially in a bullpen like his, where there's not like a clear standout of somebody that's going to take over his job right away if anybody struggles. And obviously the A's aren't in contention right now, so they have the ability to use a guy who's not too great right now, because they're not in contention, so they can test guys out for as long as they want. But I would love to see AJ Puck do that, become the closer. Similar to what I was saying about like Reynaldo Lopez, the fact that he was like a top starting pitching prospect and now is closing, it's like very reminiscent of what Josh Hader is doing, not just in the fact that they look are very similar and are both lefties that throw really hard, but the fact that, like, I don't know, Puck immediately went into the bullpen basically, which is the same with Hader. He came up as a starter and then they put him into the bullpen immediately and he just took off from there. So I could see that happening with Puck, but like Rick said, he's not really striking out a ton of guys, even though he's got a sub 2 ERA. And I totally agree with the Zach Jackson call. He seems like the most dominant guy in that bullpen, especially in terms of strikeout rate and stuff. You can also make a case for Sam Moll. But I think if you really want to go dark horse, and this is probably not something that you want to go and pick up right away, definitely monitor a little bit for a while. I think if Lou Trevino starts to turn it around, I know it's terrible. I know it's might be unbelievable to say that when he has a 9.20 ERA, but he's striking out more batters than he has ever in his career. And he's sort of looking like a couple tweaks away from being able to retake that job. So if Jimenez continues to struggle for maybe a week or two and Trevino really starts to turn it around, I could see A's manager Mark Kotze be like, oh, well, this guy has the experience. We had him as the closer all of last year, so we might want to try him out there. But I would definitely be wary of that. Even if he does end up getting the job, I would still wait a week or so just to see if he's actually back. But you never know. Sorry to be long-winded. As a Bay Area sports fan, you know, I got to go on and on about my A's.
No, I'll take it. You know, unfortunately, of how good the Yankees are, I don't have to go on and on, on and on about them, because we know who's getting the saves there. But no, it's a very interesting bullpen, and one of the ones I'm sure down the line, we get closer to the trade deadline, we're going to be diving into, because those few saves that'll come out of it, they may be valuable in the stretch. So we may have to try and find that dark horse. So very good names to keep circle on your watch list. Obviously, you're not going to make any drastic moves for these guys yet, but put a little circle around them, star them on your sheets, notes, whatever you have, to keep an eye on them once as the season progresses. But we go from your Bay Area sports teams to Rick's team out in Boston. And another week went by where we have a new closer in Boston. And it may not be someone we were expecting. Tanner Houck's been getting, got the most recent saves. So I guess before we get into your dark horse, Rick, do you think Houck's here to stay? And then if he's not, who's a sleeper candidate to take over for Boston if and when Houck starts to falter and they make another switch?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Houck's looked really good since they moved him into this. He's been in the bullpen for a while, but he was kind of piggybacking off, you know, Rich Hill and other starters. So this, basically this whole month, he's been only working one, two innings tops, and he's really put up great. His June numbers look great. You know, given the other inconsistencies in this bullpen, I'm excited that it looks like there's some sort of, you know, like fine, like, potential long-term closer, even if it's only this season, like that's long-term enough. But so I think, yeah, as long as he's, you know, pitching well in this role, like I don't see why they would move him off of it. You know, he does have some issues against lefties, but I guess the only other options there, John Schreiber's still pitching well. He's moved into more of a setup role though. He's at least getting holds. So for those of you in holds leagues, he's creeping up those rankings. Matt Strom, maybe the best lefty they had. Him and Diekman could get some saves if there's like a very lefty, you know, dominant lineup coming up in the ninth. So those are really the only options that I see right now.
Jake, do you have any different read? Do you think Houck's here to stay? Or how much are you trusting this ride right now for Boston?
Pretty interesting to see Houck take over. That's another guy who was a starting pitching prospect and has become a closer pretty recently. Interesting to see that Garrett Whitlock was moved to the rotation when, like, you already, like, they just flip flop Whitlock and Houck, which is pretty weird. You don't really see that too often. I really thought Strom was going to be the closer after he had back to back saves, but then Houck literally just took it over 2 days later, was the closer again. So I think those could be the two guys, like, switching off depending on matchups, like Rick said. But if we're talking about dark horses, one guy that I've always liked, I love when guys come over from overseas. It's just super interesting to see how the stats translate and stuff. But I've always loved Hirokazu Sawamura. He's throws a really hard splitter, which is something you don't see often. Obviously, you got that with Yoan Duran, but Sawamura throws a little slower in that regard. But it's pretty interesting to see splitters in the close to 90 miles per hour. He hasn't been super dominant or anything, but I would love to see him get a shot after he was a closer in Japan, obviously. But I don't think he's going to get the chance. I think Houck might just run away with this. He's got the stuff to pitch in the ninth inning. He's got the weird arm angle. It's obviously, like everybody says, Chris Sale-esque. So it's definitely still one to watch, but I think Houck might run away with this. And I don't see why the Red Sox wouldn't keep him in there, because they've just been struggling so hard to find a consistent closer that they finally found one that seems to be doing well. It would be pretty brainless for them to go away from that.
I'm just going to ask this question because I've heard it mentioned a little bit over the past couple days. Chris Sale's making his, he's starting to throw. He's going to be back there. Rick, as a guy out in the Boston area, is there any scenario in which Chris Sale enters this conversation? Do you think when he's back, he's thrown right in the rotation? Do we have to circle him as a potential saves candidate down the line, or do you think he's going right into the rotation?
Around here, people are obsessed with that idea. I want Chris Sale in the starting rotation as long as he's able to pitch out of the rotation. I mean, if you know, the medical staff's like, hey, you probably should come back and only throw one or two innings this year, then okay, then I'll take him as closer or setup man. But I would rather him in the rotation, obviously. It's not like the Red Sox don't need help there either, so... it would be interesting, though, like you talk about Houck being a lot of the Houck gets that Chris Sale comp a lot, the right-handed Chris Sale. If you had him and Sale at the back end of the bullpen just coming out to get righties and lefties, that would be that'd be pretty fun to watch, I guess.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break as we move over to some of the other teams in the American League. When we get back, we're going to go into one of the more intriguing situations out in Kansas City and much more here on the In the Pen podcast. And we're back here on the In the Pen podcast. I am Callan, joined as always with Rick, and today with Jake. So we're going to get into the next dark horse candidate, the next dark horse bullpen, and it's out in Kansas City. We've had kind of a mix and match situation. We don't really know who's the between Stalmont and Scott Barlow. So Jake, give me the current up to date. Who's your favorite out in Kansas City? And then also give me a dark horse to monitor in this Royal bullpen, or a name you're trying to, who may sneak up on you and jump in this conversation.
Well, I wish it was Stalmont. I don't think it is. I think it's Barlow. He's been getting the majority of the saves this year. I wish it was Stalmont because he's available in my league, so I'd actually be able to have him on some of my teams. And Barlow is, of course, owned in almost 100% of leagues, except for maybe some 10-teamers where closers aren't too valuable. But nonetheless, Stalmont's got, I think, better abilities. He's strikes out more batters. All of the things you look at when you're looking at dominance of a reliever, but it's hard to tell who else to look at in that bullpen. Amir Garrett has struggled for the last 2 years. He would seem to be the next in line after those two, but he's also like one of the only lefties in that pen, so you can't really risk solidifying him in the ninth inning when you don't have many other options when lefties come up. And then everybody else in that bullpen seems to be struggling. I think the one guy, though, to look out for is Jose Cuas. I think that's how you pronounce his name. He's got an interesting story where he came up as a position player for the Brewers and was let go and then was pitching an independent ball while getting his degree in, I forget what, business administration or something. But he ended up making a return and pitching in the minor leagues, and now he's in the major leagues, which is super cool. I better start pitching now. I still got time to make it as a 27-year-old like Cuas did. But he's pretty interesting. He doesn't strike out a ton of guys, but he's only got a 1.23 ERA right now, 1.23. So just because there's not many options out there, I think he's one of the most interesting ones. But like I said, there's really not much competition there. So I'd hope that if Barlow falters at all, that it would be Stalmont. And if Stalmont falters, that the next in line would probably be Garrett, just because he's got the experience, but not too many options there.
Yeah. Rick, do you have much of a different read, or you think it's kind of Barlow's emerged as from Kansas City and that's about it at this point?
Every time Scott Barlow looks like he's pulling away with this role, like Josh Stalmont comes back and has two saves the next week. So I think Barlow is kind of pulling away, but with Mike Matheny, you never know. I think the closer of the future is there. It's Dylan Coleman. I think that's, upper 90s fastball. Big, like 6'5", 240, like just like looks like, your typical back end, come in, throw hard, throw sliders and just, get up tons of swings and misses. He's been a little up and down this year, but I think that's a name to look out for. Probably not for this year because the Royals are heading towards being in full on tank mode. So it'll probably be Barlow or Stalmont the rest of the year, maybe Garrett a little bit, but he needs to start pitching better for that to happen.
Yeah, they may be entering that conversation that we've kind of had of closers we might not even be that interested in having because of how poor the Royals have been this season, how few and far save situations will actually be. But between that and this next team, we have a conversation that can go a whole podcast length, and it's a team we talk about every single week on the show, and we'll continue to talk about them, and it's the Seattle Mariners. Jake, I'm just going to throw it right to you. What's your present read out in Seattle? Who's leading this timeshare? And do we have any other under-the-radar names to enter into this timeshare? What's going on in Seattle?
Yeah, this is a really fun one. I love the Mariners bullpen. They just got so many options, and they're sort of turning into the Rays, where it's just like you never know who's going to close out the next ball game. Last week, I was streaming on Twitch. I don't really get many followers, so nobody really got to hear this advice, and I called out Diego Castillo as someone to watch out for that I picked up in all my leagues. I picked him up in TGFBI a couple weeks ago, expecting him to get some saves, and it paid off right away. I think he got two saves for me in the first week that he was on my team. That's a pretty solid pickup if you have to ask me, but nonetheless his ERA was like over 7 and he's dropped it a couple points over the last few weeks, and he's just been striking out guys like crazy. So I love what Diego Castillo is doing, and I think Paul Sewald is like clearly the high leverage guy. It's a very Cardinals-esque situation where you have maybe not the best guy closing, and then you have the better guy high leverage relieving. And not to say that Helsley isn't better than Gallegos, but that's become a pretty cemented closer battle over there, where Helsley has taken over the closer role and Gallegos is the high leverage reliever. But back to the Mariners bullpen, I think Sewald's the clear high leverage guy, which leaves the ninth inning open for a lot of guys. I wish Andrés Muñoz was getting better results this year. He's just got a crazy fastball, averaging 99.9 miles per hour, so basically 100 on average with that fastball, but his ERA is above 5. So that leaves a couple other guys that I think are pretty under the radar. I think Penn Murphy is pretty cool, not only because of his name. What is his brother's name? Pencil? nonetheless,
Nick would be proud of you for that. Nick would be very proud of you for that pun.
I appreciate it. He's got an ERA under 1, and he's got a 27-6 strikeout to walk ratio. So that's pretty impressive. Speaking of strikeout to walk ratio, Eric Swanson's at 22-1, and he just returned, and that's an amazing strikeout to walk ratio. So I think he's a guy who could obviously take over the role. He might need a couple weeks to get up to speed. I've always loved Sergio Romo as a Giants fan. Love what he does. I don't think he's going to take over that role, but Matthew Festa striking out more batters than anybody in that whole bullpen. So he's also an option. It's just like, there's so many names. It's endless and they just never stop coming. Like even with Ken Giles on the IL and like sending Drew Steckenrider to the minor leagues, they just don't stop pumping out relievers. I really think they're the new Mariners, or they are the Mariners, the new Mariners. They're the new Rays in terms of cultivating bullpen talent.
Mm. I'm just going to throw out the same thing I said last time we were on the show together. Ken Giles, I think he will be the team's primary closer by the time he comes back. Just going to say it right now. I do think that. Rick, before we move on to your favorite reliever in all of Major League Baseball right now and this entire season, do you have a favorite out in Seattle, or is Diego Castillo for you as well?
Yeah, starting to lean more towards favoring Diego Castillo over Paul Sewald, just in general, like for, I guess, saves plus holds leagues. Obviously Castillo had a rough stretch a couple games back in May, but you know, over his last 9 innings, he's only allowed 1 hit and has a 15-1 strikeout to walk ratio. So that's seems like he's turned things around there. And you know, shouldn't be shocking to anyone who's followed Castillo over the last couple of years. He's got that good of stuff. So, yeah, I'm really, really liking Castillo right now. And people might get scared away by his season ERA. So if he's still around and, you know, available, go pick him up now.
All right. You've been waiting patiently, Rick. So I'll let you talk about the Minnesota bullpen right now and bring up Duran. Same question we've been asking. What's your current readout in Minnesota? Who's the favorite? Who's a dark horse? And then pump up Duran, because I know you've been waiting patiently to do so.
So it kind of pains me, I guess, a little bit, but I think Emilio Pagan's back to being the primary closer here. He has 3 saves since Duran had it. Picked up his last save. Duran's last save came May 24th, and yeah, Pagan's got 3 saves since then. So, it looks like that's turning a little bit towards in Pagan's favor. But that doesn't mean, you know, you can just outgo dropping Duran ever just yet, because you're still getting, you know, strikeouts. You're still getting pretty good ratios for the most part. I don't think he's totally out of the woods yet, because we've seen Emilio Pagan, you know, completely fall apart before. His peripherals aren't looking great. He's missing more bats this season than last year. I think with that added splitter, that's helped, but there's still a little volatility there. So I still hold Duran, but you know, Pagan's definitely the top option there for now.
Jake, do you have a different readout? This, what's your opinion? Or if you throw out a dark horse, if you're trying to find someone in this Minnesota pen to sneak into the conversation, is there anyone that can enter this, or is it just bat down to those two?
Right now, it's looking like those two, and they're able to keep each other from getting too gassed in that ninth inning role by sort of switching off every week, it seems like. So I'm not really sure what's going to happen there. I think it obviously should be Duran because he's, I don't know, he's just incredible, throwing over 100 miles per hour with like a mid-90s splitter. That doesn't even make sense. And a 39-4 strikeout to walk ratio, which is bonkers. So I think it should be Duran. Maybe they just like using him more as the high leverage guy because he's so amazing. But there are some guys that are pretty interesting in that bullpen. I love what Griffin Jacks has been doing. He's a guy that can be used in sort of a multi-inning role, which sort of might keep him out of that bullpen or out of the closer's role. But he's got a sub-3 ERA and 34-10 strikeout to walk ratio, which is very impressive. And I don't know if there's anybody else that's really running away with sort of looking like the third guy up in line. I think Tyler Duffy has obviously gotten some save chances this year, but he's really not been good. He's got an ERA over 6, which is not too promising at all. I would love to see Trevor McGill get a chance. He could join his brother Tyler in looking like one of the big breakouts of the season, but he's also another multi-inning guy, and I don't know if he'll get a chance like that, but that would be pretty cool. But I think because they have the two options right now in Pagan and Duran, that they don't really need to turn to anybody else right now. Maybe if one of those guys gets injured and they keep wanting to put one or the other in a high leverage role and turn to somebody else in the closing role, then somebody like Jax or McGill or Duffy ends up in the closer role. But right now they have a bevy of options that they don't really need to sort of change anything in that ninth inning.
Yeah, and the last bullpen I want to kind of dive into is one that Rick alluded to at the beginning of the show, and that's the Detroit bullpen when he mentioned Gregory Soto. He wasn't so high on him, but he's starting to, you know, raise him up, and, you know, but we know walks have always been an issue for Soto. So, Jake, how confident are you that Soto's, you know, emerging and taking this job? Is there anybody, I mean, we know Michael Fulmer's right there to be in that mix, but is there anybody that you're keeping an eye on in Detroit tentative conversation? Is, you know, do you are you trusting, are you picking up Fulmer as a stash, or how are you handling this Detroit bullpen?
I think you got to trust Soto right now. The only thing that people were knocking him for last year was the walks, and he's really gotten rid of those this year, which is a great sign for him and a great sign for the Tigers, even though they're not been too great this year. It's cool to have a closer that you can sort of count on, and a young one like Soto that you can maybe count on for the next few years. But they have a lot of other options in that bullpen. Obviously, Joe Jimenez has been one that people have always been high on for the last few years, since he was a reliever that came up relatively young and had success. But I think there's guys in that bullpen that have had a lot of success besides Joe Jimenez, better success than Jimenez. And that'd be Will Vest and Alex Lang have been absolutely incredible. I think Will Vest is a guy who just came off the IL, so you may have to give him another week or so to get back in the rhythm of things, but he's been striking out 35% of batters with a sub-2 ERA, and Alex Lang is not striking out as many batters, but he's also got a sub-2 ERA. So those are a couple interesting guys out there. I think they might get a chance before Fulmer. I know Fulmer was the closer last year in September, and Chafin was a big pickup over the offseason, but I would think that these guys that are having sort of better seasons than those two would get a chance before Fulmer or Chafin, but you never know. I mean, obviously Fulmer has some experience there, so he might be the one to ultimately get it. But right now, if you are a Gregory Soto owner, I wouldn't fret at all, because he's looking much better than he was last year, and last year he was pretty dang good.
Rick, anything more to add about Detroit and your Gregory Soto, I'd say, optimism as of right now, or are we good there?
Yeah, as long as he's, yeah, like we said, as long as the walks are down, like, Soto shouldn't have anything to worry about. This bullpen's like really sneaky, like really good. If Soto's like pitching well, then, you know, you have Fulmer, Chafin, Lang, Jimenez, and Vest, and, you know, yeah, like Joe Jimenez, I was someone I was really high on way back, and like when I first started writing about relievers here, and it's taken him a while, but he's having a pretty good year. And like, yeah, Vest and Lang are two of the top relievers in the AL right now, and we know what Fulmer and Chafin can do. So this is a sneaky good bullpen, and So Soto does have a little bit to worry about there with all the options behind him, but I don't think he's going to lose the role unless he has like a really bad week or two, or which, I mean, he has had in the past. So he can't really afford to have one of those, you know, meltdown type stretches like he's had. But for now, he's safe. And as long as he's, you know, this walk rate continues to stay low, I think he'll be all right.
Yeah, it's them and Baltimore, the two teams that just stand out as they're not good offensively, or they're, you know, last place in the division is just not good baseball teams this year, but their bullpens have been actually very interesting. I've mentioned it in the past that Jorge Lopez has kind of saved my seasons in a lot of my save leagues. This is a player I picked up not expecting to get too much or just get a couple saves, and he's been a set it and forget it guy, which I never thought I would say about Jorge Lopez. Rick, you remember how excited I was to talk about Jorge Lopez when we first did these shows during draft season. So it's crazy what these teams we didn't expect to see him too much for. A few of them actually gave us some consistent bullpen, and I'd be very appreciative of that. But before we get to the what do we watch for, we want to just throw out one or two names that are under the radar, some of like our favorite guys that haven't been mentioned here on a different team that we've mentioned. So we'll start with you. We'll start with Rick. Who's someone who we didn't fully mention or on a team we didn't mention through the show? Someone you're monitoring as a dark horse, you know, name to keep an eye on going forward.
Let's stay in Baltimore. I think Felix Bautista is, you know, Jorge Lopez has been great. His ERA is under one. Obviously, he's not going anywhere anytime soon as long as he keeps pitching that way. But perhaps he could wind up being a trade, you know, someone the Orioles try to trade at the deadline. So I'm going to say Felix Bautista, you know, he's pitched pretty much almost as well as Lopez this year. Big 6'5", big lanky, good frame, throws hard. Touches 100, good slider, splitter, kind of all the things you look for in a lockdown closer. So I'm kind of intrigued by Batista's potential.
And Jake, we'll move it over to you. Who's one of your favorite guys to monitor as a dark horse guy down the stretch as we get to the midway point in the season?
Mm-hmm. I love what Eli Morgan's been doing. I obviously don't think he's gonna take over the closer role when you got somebody named Emmanuel Clase in the closer role there. So that's sort of making me go look at Texas, where you've got Brock Burke, and I've been loving what Brock Burke's been doing. He's another guy who's moved from the rotation to the bullpen and has had tons of success. He's literally looking like a completely different pitcher. Something we haven't seen. I think he added like 3 miles an hour to his fastball, which is something you don't see often at all. It sort of makes sense though from him going to the rotation to the bullpen, so that's pretty cool. And the reason that I think he could have a chance, not because Joe Barlow has been bad or anything, but Barlow is not really somebody who's overwhelming in the bullpen. He only strikes out 20% of batters. He throws in the mid-90s, but so does Burke, and Burke does it from the left side. I don't think that Burke will end up taking the closer role, but when your ERA is like, what is it, 2.5 points lower than Barlow's, and Barlow's is at 3.22. That's, I don't know. You got a sub one ERA over the most innings pitched in your bullpen. You got to be considered at least a little bit. So if you're looking for saves and you're desperately looking for saves and like every single option is scooped up right now, I think consider Burke, because I think even if he doesn't end up getting saves, I think he's a great option in that bullpen nonetheless, just by throwing a lot of innings. He does the multi-inning stuff. He has been super effective. And if you're in a league that's maybe a daily league or a league that sort of incentivizes you to pick up pitchers that aren't taking it away from your starts but get multiple innings, I think Burke is a really good option. He's been amazing all year, and it's been a result of that huge increase in his fastball velocity.
Yeah, and I'll add one more Texas lefty that's been extremely impressive. I just looked up his Baseball Savant page, and it's all red. It's Matt Moore. He's been extremely impressive this season. He's a 96th percentile in X batting average, 90th percentile in hard hit percentage allowed, 93rd percentile in X ERA. Guys are just inducing some weak contact. He's getting strikeouts. The only concern with him is he walks. But on a day when Barlow got two consecutive outings for Texas, I believe, going into Monday night, Matt Moore got the save. And I'm not saying it's kind of the similar exact same point that Jake made with Texas. Barlow is fine. I like what he's done out of the pen, but you know, Texas is, they're starting to play a lot better baseball. And you know, if you're in a desperate save plus holds league, I think Matt Moore is definitely an under the radar name that needs to be brought up more. He was kind of an afterthought. He just got a minor league contract, kind of no one really expected much from him. And this year he's come back with Texas and rebirthed himself, and it's been a lot of fun to watch. So I think Matt Moore is a name that's definitely, for the same reasons Jake said at Brock Burke, and probably Burke might even be a deeper call than Moore, but it's worth monitoring. He's impressed me a lot this season. So I'll wrap it up.
Oh, go ahead. I was quickly want to add, just if we're on the topic of the Texas Rangers, that Jonathan Hernandez and Jose Leclerc are both, the rehabs are both at AAA right now. So those two guys also are, they should be back either the end of this month or probably before the All-Star break. So, you know, we've seen Leclerc was the closer for a while there, and Hernandez was emerging as one of the better setup men in baseball. So if they get those two guys back to go along with, you know, what they have now, that's another one of those like really deep, really potentially great bullpens.
So I guess before we get to what we watch for, just one word, who is the favorite for saves for Texas? When Leclerc and Hernandez come back, does Barlow remain the closer? Do you think one of them eats in? Who's the reliever you want to own in Texas right now, or when these guys come back?
I might be the Jose Leclerc's biggest fan, but I don't think, coming off, you know, Tommy John, I just doubt that they go right to him in the closer role. I think it's Barlow's to lose, but I don't want to say he's on thin ice, but like two bad outings might be enough to make a change there to either Burke, Moore, or one of these guys rehabbing in AAA.
Jake, let's hear from you. Is it Barlow for you as well?
Yeah, it's definitely Barlow right now, but I loved what Jonathan Hernandez was doing before he got injured, so I think he would be my favorite of the two returnees. Though, you know, when you're coming off a major surgery like that, it's always difficult to know what to expect. But yeah, definitely stay with Barlow if you got him, and don't go dropping him for one of those guys. But it will be really interesting to see those two guys return, because they just have really talented arms, and you don't really know how a guy's going to look when they return from a surgery like that. So I'm excited to watch them throw some pitches for the Rangers pretty soon.
Yeah, we may be adding Texas to the list of bullpens that we're going to be constantly shrugging our shoulders with down the stretch here on this show. But to wrap it up, like we always do, we're going to be giving note of some of the things we're watching for this coming week. Jake, we'll start with you. What's one or two situations you're trying to keep an eye on over the next week and see how that pen plays out?
Well, I think the A's is a pretty clear example of something to watch for, because Danny Jimenez has just been struggling so immensely, and they have a couple of guys that, like we spoke about, have a chance to take over that closer's role if things continue to go poorly for Danny Jimenez. In the National League, though, I think I want to keep an eye on that Knable situation, and the Reds as well. They have been a lot better than they were in the first month of the season, and they have a lot of options down there. I think Edwin Diaz is, his brother or something. Alexis Diaz has a good chance of taking over that role, and I love what Sir Anthony Dominguez is doing in Philadelphia, so I would love to see him take over that role. But yeah, it seems like a lot of the bullpen situations, the closer situations, are finally figuring themselves out. Like you guys had always talked about the Marlins and the Red Sox for so many weeks in a row, and now it finally looks like those situations are getting figured out. So it's cool. We get new bullpens to talk about for once.
Yeah, Rick, and are any of those bullpens ones you want to watch for, or what's your what are you keeping an eye on over this next week?
Yeah, I want to go with Boston and Miami. I want to see Tanner Scott and Tanner Houck, the two Tanners. I want to see those guys, you know, kind of take that job and run with it, and we'll see if they're going to be able to. I have more confidence than I think Scott, maybe, because I feel like Cora might play matchups more, whereas Scott's kind of the only guy in Miami. But those two spots definitely interest me. And yeah, just whatever happens in Chicago with Hendricks out. Graveman's been good this year. He hasn't been great, I would say, but we'll see how he handles the closer role now that he'll have to, you know, working for the next 3 or so weeks.
Yeah, Chicago is definitely one that I'm keeping my eye on. I want to see who takes over for Hendricks. I feel like I have this weird feeling that Jill Kelly's going to, I know he's supposedly, as we're recording this, the closer for tonight's game, but that's because Graveman's worked really two nights in a row. I have this weird feeling that Kelly's going to work into this save situation more than we're expecting. I just, not going off anything other than just a gut feeling. They signed him for a reason. Now that they're down Bummer and they're down Hendricks, I think they're going to allow them to use Kelly a lot more and maybe get him some saves. So in deep leagues, he might be someone worth stashing. And same thing with Tampa Bay. I want to see what the, how the role continues to roll, grow for Adam or FireEisen or Poche or me for the Tampa Bay saves. So let's see who, if anyone emerges, as we keep saying with Tampa Bay, does it's Adam, Kevin Cash is going to mix and match, but you know, what's, how does this play out? Cause it's, Kittredge isn't officially not coming back. There's no more, you know, does anyone eat into this? Can someone emerge and be the Kittredge? Cause he kind of was emerging as the go-to guy in Tampa prior to his injury. So we'll see if someone can do that for at this point as well. So that's going to do it for this week's episode of In the Pen. Jake, let us know where we can find you on Twitter, plug some of your work, or even plug your Twitch if you want. I know you said you stream, so plug where I can find your work, where you'll be hanging out, and give us, let us know what we're working on.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, at Jake Crumpler. It's the same thing on Twitch. I try to stream like once a week or something whenever I have time to play MLB The Show, and it's a good spot to hear my my thoughts on fantasy and other stuff. It's a lot of just me talking to myself. Don't really have a lot of viewers or anything, but it's a fun time. So come join at Jake Crumpler on both Twitter and Twitch. You can find all my work on Pitcherless. I'll be writing the reliever ranks the next 2 days. So Wednesday and Thursday, check out those articles. And then I write a weekly article over at the Athletes Hub, where I cover top fantasy baseball performers. I do a podcast over there as well called Free Baseball. And then I just finished up my first week writing for Baseball HQ, which unfortunately requires a subscription, but it's definitely worth it. I do playing time analysis for the Giants and the A's. So that's always a great website to subscribe to. They have amazing stuff to help you through your fantasy season.
And if you're listening to this podcast, you know Rick pretty well by now, but Rick, just as usual, plug where I can find you on Twitter. I know you have the, you want to plug the weekly reliever ranks, so just give us some of a little insight into that as well.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at I am Rick Graham, and yeah, just as Jake has mentioned, he's got the reliever links coming up, and you know, just keep, for all your reliever needs, that should be your one-stop shop for whatever you need reliever related every day. So keep an eye out for that every morning.
Yeah, and I am at Callen underscore Elsliger. I usually do the nastiest pitches. I've had to take a step back on that due to bar prep for just graduated law school. So preparing for that, which will also cause me to take a step back from this podcast within the next couple of weeks. So if you don't hear my voice, that's why. But yeah, I clearly am very underqualified compared to these other two. So I just speak into a microphone and that's good enough for me. But that's going to wrap it up here on In the Pen. I am Callen, joined as with Jake and Rick. Thank you guys for joining as always. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week on the In the Pen podcast.